Who are Leslie's four opponents when she runs for city council? Answer at the end of the episode.
I would like to go on record, speaking as a citizen of Pawnee.
I'm Kurt Hapley, and I just realized I'm not holding my microphone.
And I will call my new Italian fast casual eatery the Locale Calzone Zone.
You can trust me, because I don't care enough about you to lie.
Everything I do is the attitude of an award winner, because I've won an award.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis!
Hello and welcome to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast where I discuss anything and everything from character breakdowns to episode rewatches, as well as some other trivia and tidbits about the show. My name is Brian and I'll be your host. This is episode number 111 being recorded Saturday, March 16th, 2024, and today I'm going to be talking about Season 4, Episode 9, The Trial of Leslie Knope. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email citizensofpawnee@gmail.com. You can also follow and message the show on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast, as well as my other page at Parks Rec Memes. And just a reminder that this podcast will have full spoilers for the entire series. What's going on, everyone? I got a couple messages over on Instagram this week from some of the listeners of this show. First up was Celia Hafner. She commented on the post for last week's episode, which was The Smallest Park. And she actually just put in the comments there, because if you'll remember, right in the beginning of the episode, after I called you guys folks for like the second or third time in like the first minute, I was like, oh, I wonder how many times I'm going to call you folks. Well, she commented and said, you said folks 11 times. So that's how many times I was going to say it. Now, Celia, you'll have to get back to me. Actually, you can comment maybe on this week's one. Did I say it 11 times like in the entire episode, or 11 times after I was like, how many times am I going to call you guys folks? But yeah, no, I thought it was really funny. Actually, I kind of did like a when I saw it, you know, like the small LOL. So no, I appreciate that. I remember Elf from Melmac. When the show first started, Citizens of Pawnee, he would email things like that. He would always just be like, "Dude." One of my favorite one with Al from Melmac was that, and I think I talked about it in the episode, The Tammies. Yeah, when Ron grabs the giant jug of the whatever the hell it is, the moonshine that the Swansons make, and he starts chugging the whole thing. I originally was like, oh my god, it's like a 5-gallon jug. And he called me out on that, just talking about how gigantic a 5-gallon jug is. So there was a couple other times, but speaking of Alfred Melmac, he used to be my boss, actually. And that's when I worked at a restaurant. That's the only time I ever worked at a restaurant. It was about 9 months of my life. And I have all the respect in the world for servers and anyone in the service industry, because it is tough. And if you've never done it before, you got to fucking do it before you can like talk shit. But anyway, one of the things he always taught our staff is to call tables folks, or pretty much anything by like the, except for the most common one, which is always like, hey guys, how we doing? What's up guys? Hey guys, how's it going? You know, if you have a table of all gentlemen, I mean, most of the time it's fine. You can say, hey guys, hey guys. However, that doesn't always fly when you have women at the table as well, especially if it's a table full of women. Most of the time they don't care. I mean, like I noticed that, because there was a few times I would slip and I never had any problems. No one ever called anything out, but I totally understand it. And it's something I never really thought of. So I still say guys a lot. Like I say it on this podcast all the time when I'm addressing you folks. Yeah, I did that on purpose. But yeah, especially in this day and age when, you know, people pay a lot more attention to pronouns, I still, when I'm in public settings and there's a lot, you know, a big group of people, I say folks a lot. But again, you'll hear me say guys and folks all the time. But it was still awesome, Celia. Thanks for pointing that out. And then I also got a couple messages from Teresa from Germany. She said, hey, Brian, I just listened to the Smallest Park episode. I also think it's one of my favorite episodes, and I love the scene where Leslie and Ben get back together. However, I don't get your point about how Leslie didn't apologize. She does say that she is very sorry. Okay. So, last week, I did. I went, like, not on a rant, but I think I did kind of emphasize how I thought it was shitty that Leslie was like, I did this and I did that and I didn't think about your feelings, but she never apologized. That was, like, my gripe. She never actually said, I'm sorry, Ben. Well, she totally said, I'm sorry. She literally said what Teresa wrote here. She did say, I'm very sorry. I don't know how I missed that. Maybe for some reason in my head, I was thinking about the whole steamroller thing. And I'm not even lying here. I'm not trying to, like, make, like, a bullshit excuse. I think in my head, it was just like, yeah, she is so used to always, you know, again, the steamroller thing that maybe I just assumed I'm sorry isn't really part of her her vocabulary, because you in later on in season 5 or 6, whatever that is, when they get that guy Reston St. James from Eagleton, who's going to make the new park for Pawnee, when Leslie comes in and she gets like false information, or she thinks he like screwed them over. So she like starts spraying him with like all the shaving cream and all the shit. And she's trying to apologize. Like Ben's like, you've got to apologize to the guy. And she can't do it. She's just like, I'm sorry. Like, it's one of those funny scenes where it's just like, they keep showing cuts of her. Like, there's like 7 or 8 different takes of her trying to say it. And then finally Ben's like, what the fuck? Basically he doesn't say that, but he's like, come on. And she's like, all right, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. So, yeah, that's why I kind of thought maybe she didn't even say it to Ben. But, yeah, she clearly does. So, Teresa, thanks for calling me out on that one. I don't know how I missed that. And then she also said, I work in PR and it takes so many edits to get a sign or poster made. I wish we could do it in one day. And now this was like kind of, there was a little bit more in the email. I just took some of it out because she has a bit more that I'm going to read. But this last part that I just read there about her working in PR and the edits and the posters, that has to do also with last week's episode when I talked about how it doesn't make any sense how quickly Tom is getting this shit made. Like, all these, the keychains and the shirts and the hats. Like, like I said, it's awesome. Like, it looks great. And the episode, you're like, oh, that's really cool. But it doesn't make any sense. Like, how the hell did he get this stuff done so quickly, you know, in, like, less than a day or whatever. So, Teresa, thank you for kind of backing me up on that one. And then there was a second message she said about the money exchange. In Germany, we have the saying, cash is king, and there are still many occasions where you can only pay in cash. People my age are annoyed by this and tend not to carry cash all the time. I don't know why, but I like cash, and in my group of friends, I'm always the one who carries cash. So often, I help out friends, and then they PayPal me the money or give it back to me. And I don't charge interest or so, but in many cases, they also round up as a thank you. Example, 10 euro for a 9 euro bill. Well played, Teresa. So this, again, something I talked about in just like my BS segment, where I talked about how we were all going to make extra money with my great idea about shortchanging people. So she found a different way to do it, and that's be the only one in the group that actually carries change. So this kind of like what I talked about last week, be that person that has all the cash that everyone else needs. But yes, this is a good situation here where you're borrowing. You're lending them cash. I always had a problem with saying borrowing like both ways. Like I would be like, oh, what was it? Like I borrowed it to him, but I should have said I lent it to him. Anyway, just always have that cash. It's good, good. And the thing is, I never have cash. So it's funny for me to tell other people, always have that cash. Actually, you know what? I have, in the last couple years, I do tend to, I have cash on me like towards the end of the week because that's when I do my garage selling and most garage selling. Like at some of them, they'll allow you to do like Venmo or Zelle or whatever. But for the most part, you got to have cash. So I guess I do have it on me sometimes. But that's pretty much all it goes to. Everything else, even if I have cash on me, I just use my cards. But Teresa, thanks for thanks for showing me the interesting way you can rip your friends off and make money off of them. Love it. Anyone else? Keep it going. Let me know how you do it. All right. So over at Parks Rec Memes on Instagram, I'm doing what I would call my most ambitious project to date. And I'm doing a March Madness 32-player bracket. So I've done tournaments on the Parks Rec meme page, Many times. It's been a while since I've done one. I was doing them a lot a couple years ago. Like, literally, I would spend 3 or 4 days on one because I would just start with 16. So that goes pretty quickly. It's just 16 to 8 to 4 to 2 to 1. So it's like 5 days and the thing's done. So for this one, it was like, you know what? I'm going to spend a lot of time on this. I'm going to get better pictures of everyone. I'm going to, like, make higher resolutions for them. And I'm just going to, like, make the bracket look cool. So actually, if you're listening to this, obviously you're hearing this, but you can take the template I'm going to put on Instagram, print it out yourself, fill it out, you know, send it to me. Let me know, like, who you think is going to win or how you think it's going to go. And I'll read some of them off, you know, if they look good or how you guys are aiming. However, again, this isn't going to make any sense because you're going to hear this like 3 days after it already started. So maybe we just don't send any of those things in, you cheaters. But I'm going to go ahead and kind of just go over it real quick then for those of you maybe who aren't on Instagram if you just want to hear how I set this up. All right. So like I said, I picked 32 people. All right. I'm not going to list them all right now. I'll just say their names as I list their matchups. Now, this is the first round, which was yesterday. I was calling this the play-in round, but I guess it makes more, it's just round one. Because I was saying, oh, it's the play-in round to get to the Sweet 16. However, all of the matches were just single matchups. A play-in is usually just one or two teams that are trying to get into the tournament. So technically, it's just round one, I guess, and it started at 32. But anyway, all right, so these were the ones that I did yesterday, which was Friday the 15th of March. All right. So the first matchup, Oren beat Gail Gergich. Oh, and I should also say that these are all side characters. I didn't say side characters like on the Instagram page, but I did note, you know, who's your favorite Parks and Rec character. And I did just say I left out the main character. So any of the 11 people who are featured in the opening credits, and that does include Mark Brandanowicz. However, Craig Middlebrooks, yeah, he becomes part of, like, the main cast. And I can't remember if they put his name in, but he was kind of, like, a bigger name, Billy Eichner. But anyway, okay, let me get back to this. So, one more time. The first one, Oren beat out Gail Gergich. Trevor Nelson beat out Jessica Wicks. Trevor Nelson is the lawyer who, he actually works for Sweetums kind of at the end. He's kind of a turd. He's like the very no-nonsense guy. Just Mark Evan Jackson, great actor. He's hysterical. His character's great too. And then he beat out Jessica Wicks, who is, of course, the president of Sweetums. Next up, Tammy 2 beat out Brett, who is from Animal Control. The next one, Dennis Feinstein beat out Morris Lerpus. Morris Lerpus is obviously is part of the Lerpus family, but he's the one that, like, Donna kind of pisses him off when he's when they're seeing, like, Death Canoe 2, and she keeps putting spoilers. And he's the one that always talks about how, like, eh, why do people even buy stuff? You can just get stuff online, you know, like, yeah, movies and stuff. So anyway, go on Instagram and look for a picture of him. Next up, Barney Varm from the accounting firm, you know, the one that's in love with Ben. He beat out Herman Lerpus, who is the one that literally in every single episode he's in, he wears the same exact outfit, which is a black Dago tee with just blue jeans. And then he's got all the tattoos. He works at, like, the pawn shop and stuff. Also part of the famous but not famous, I guess, Lerpus family of Pawnee. Next one, sorry, can't read that. Mona Lisa Saperstein beat out, ooh, Andy's favorite customer at the shoeshine stand, Kyle. Next one, Pert Hapley beat out Marsha Langman. Marsha Langman, of course, the one that's always butting heads with Leslie about basically, like, religious things. And then the final one, Jen Barkley beating out Dr. Harris, who, of course, is the very stoic, no-nonsense doctor who works with Ann Perkins. And I'm calling that the Sweetums division. All right, so then moving over to the other division, which I'm calling the Grizzle division. This is the one that is currently going right now, Saturday, March 16th. These are the matchups. John Ralphio versus the aforementioned Craig Middlebrooks. Sewage Joe versus Joan Calamezzo. Ken Hotate versus Lucy, who is Tom's girlfriend in end of season two into season three, and then he marries her in season seven. The next one is Jeremy Jam versus Gretel. Gretel's the kind of older woman who's always just got like the dumbest complaints. Like she's the one that chases Ron around his desk talking about how she got sick from drinking out of a fountain that said, "Do not drink this water." And then later on in season 5, she complains to Leslie that there's too many slugs on the sidewalk in front of her house. You know who I'm talking about. Next matchup, Dr. Lou Saperstein up against Sean Mulway Tweep. And then we got Ethel Beavers versus Harris, who is the other guy from Animal Control. Next matchup, Wendy Haverford versus Bobby Newport. Bobby Newport. And then our final matchup, Brandy Max, that's four X's, against Burley, the guitarist slash singer for Mouserat. So, yeah, make sure you head over to Instagram if you haven't done that, or why don't you go ahead and sign up for Instagram, because I could use the followers. But no, actually, if you do follow the Citizens of Pawnee page and not Parks Rec Memes, or if you are listening to this and you follow Parks Rec Memes but not Citizens of Pawnee, how dare you? But no, follow Parks Rec Memes. That's where I do like most of the fun park stuff. Citizens of Pawnee, admittedly, that page is mostly just for like just posting the page, but I do the new episode of the week. However, I will also add, you know, like when I talk about on here, it's like, oh, I'm going to throw that on the Instagram. That's on Citizens of Pawnee. Like there is something in this episode that I will get to, but you will only be able to see it on the Citizens of Pawnee Instagram. Also, for anyone who's listening, give me a 5-star review. Like, if you actually like the show, I know, like, you hear that on podcasts all the time, and I never say that, but if you could, because I guess that, like, helps me out. And also, whenever I go on Spotify, like, to listen, you know, like, I can see there's only 5 reviews, and it's like a 4.9, so I'm guessing, I don't know, the math, whatever. But come on, let's get that up. I want more than 5. Please, come on. But please make them 5-star reviews. Anyway. And then I also wanted to give a big birthday shout out to my lovely daughter, Sadie. Her birthday is this week. And we're not going to have any filler this week. If you recall, in season 7 of Parks and Rec, when you find out that Tom's business went under, it was because the world basically ran out of beef. Well, guess what, folks? I found the beef, and it's on Netflix, and it's a great show, and that's all I'm going to say. So let's talk about Parks and Rec instead. Season 4, Episode 9, The Trial of Leslie Knope, directed by Dean Holland, written by Dan Gore. For the cold open, we start off with a classic scene where Ron calls April into his office. He's confused and pissed off as to why an ad popped up and specifically used his name. It's at this point that April explains to him what cookies are and how they use and sell information and whatnot. Obviously, he's on his computer, that's it, but he's never seen one of these things before. So when she walks over and he's like, "Hey, this says, Dear Ron Swanson," and it's a literal pop-up. So, like, Ron's like, what the fuck is this? You know, especially since it called him by name. So, he's obviously pissed off, especially when she says to him, "Well, dude, if you think that's bad, try Google Earth and type in your home address." So, he does exactly that, and it's just so funny. Right when he hits enter, he looks at it for a second, and April's just like, boom. And then the next scene, we just get a smash cut of Ron outside with his computer, his keyboard, and the monitor all in his hand, and he just smashes them like into the garbage can, the giant garbage can outside. It's awesome. So, great scene. All right, so now we're in Chris's office where Leslie and Ben are officially admitting to him that they've been dating on off for about a year. So, I love that they show... The first thing they show is Leslie and Ben holding hands, and then it just kind of pans up from there. I just think that it's like they're showing solidarity, it's a tough word, and they're just kind of saying to Chris, it's just like, this isn't like them giving him the finger, but it is also them going in just like, hey, just so you know, we're not embarrassed about this. Like, yes, we are sorry that, like, it's come to this and that we are, you know, like, we broke the rules. But I just love that, yeah, they're holding hands. And it's just like, one, because they love each other. And two, it's just like, yeah, well, fuck it. Yeah, this is us. So Chris has no choice, though, and says that he has to launch a full investigation into the extent of their wrongdoing. And that they both need to report to the council chambers the next Monday morning for their ethics trial and subsequent punishment. Then we get a title card. Boom. The Trial of Leslie Knope. I've talked about it, and I feel like I do it every time there's a title card. I never understood. Maybe it's just the director. I don't know. I should look at that, actually. I should check out all the episodes that have title cards and see who directs them, because they seemingly come out of nowhere, and it's like, yeah, I guess this is, like, an important thing that's happening with Leslie, but, like, it's this episode isn't, like, it's not, like, a season finale or anything, so it's just funny to me that it's, like, why does this one get an episode kind of like Flu Season or, like, Flu Season 2 or whatever? Actually, I don't think Flu Season 2 gets one, but what does this episode have to do with, like, yeah, something like Flu Season? So, anyway, yeah, I'll never understand the title cards. All right, so Monday morning rolls around, and Ben meets Leslie in the council chambers with a gift. A stuffed Lil Sebastian doll. Ben assures Leslie he'll be with her spiritually and literally on the other side of the wall. He points to the wall and we see a tragically ugly man in a painting. For no reason other than comedy, we get like a backstory about this guy. Leslie tells us that he's a former lawyer. It's actually in a talking head also. It's like it really has nothing to do with it except that she's going to point to it a couple times just to be like, yeah, Ben's on the other side of that wall. So, of course, they have to tell us about this guy. But he's called Old Stoneface for his stoic demeanor and the fact that his face is kind of mangled because he was in a rock quarry and his face blew up like by a stick of dynamite. So he did live, and they, for whatever reason, decided to make a portrait of the guy. Maybe he didn't live. If that's the case, maybe that's why they made the portrait. But like, why would they make a picture of him alive? Because his eyes are open, he's posing, but his face is completely, like, you know, it's all burnt up and mangled. But it's yeah, so it's actually pretty funny. And I have to go back. I mentioned this scene back early in season 3 in the episode Flu Season, which is season 3, episode 2. There's a reporter who looks a lot like this guy in the painting. And I feel so bad. Like, the actor's name is Frank Moon. And in the episode, he plays, well, he's just called Businessman. I'll put a picture of him on Instagram. That's what I was talking about, the Instagram thing. But, yeah, so I feel bad. I'm not trying to call this actor ugly. But it's just really weird to me how much this guy resembles Old Stoneface. So I don't know if maybe this guy... I think he's just an actor. I don't think he has anything to do with Parks and Rec, so I don't think he was just, like, pulled from the crew. But check out Instagram for that one. All right, so now we're getting ready for the ethics meeting, and we see that this is, like, it's literally hurting Chris that he has to do this to his friends. And I actually, like, I don't know if this was, like, specifically written for him, but I love that Chris's character says to Leslie, "I have never felt so low. So low. Rob Lowe." Get it? All right. He starts to lay out all of his medicines and herbal remedies to help deal with all the stress. We're talking like 10 to 15 pill bottles. And like, he's even got one of those pill caddies, but this is like a monthly one. It's huge. Like, he pulls it out, but it's like you. So this is an episode where you like with Chris, he is like their boss, and this is an ethics meeting. And he has said to both of them that it's like they can't, that he, I mean, like, he knew nothing about them dating. So it's never like he was like, listen, you two, you got to be careful. But he has made it clear that, like, even like when he dated Ann Perkins, it's before Ann Perkins worked for the Parks Department. But he's very, very strict about this, dating policy, because, you know, he'll, like, you'll hear he gets very heated about it. Like, he tells Leslie, like, later on, and I'll get to it, but he does say, you know, like, yes, things like this can lead to corruption, and it can, and, like, fair to, you know, unfair treatment, things like that. So, yeah, he's definitely, he's stressed as hell, and it's just, when you see the amount of pill bottles he's putting out, it's just, it's nuts, and it kind of reminds me of his first episode when he tells Les, maybe it's the second episode, I think it's the first one, though, when he tells Leslie, like, because she wants to go out with Ben just to, like, talk about stuff, and he's like, oh, make sure he's back in time, you know, to help me swallow my pill, and they show the pill, and it's like an inch and a half, it's like huge, it's like one of those, like, horse tranquilizers, but it just always reminded me of that. I mean, like, how many pills he's got on the table. It's nuts. All right, so the meeting starts, and Leslie admits to breaking Chris's rule. She tells us about another Pawnee trailblazer, a woman named Sarah Nelson Quindell, who exposed her elbow while outside, and her punishment was to be set adrift on Lake Michigan like a human popsicle. So this is one of the famous, infamous, I guess I should say, Pawnee murals. And it's so funny because... this is hanging in the city council chambers. This isn't just like in the hallway. And so like Leslie described it, she was set adrift on Lake Michigan like a human popsicle. She's literally like the woman, she's dressed all fancy, like has like the big dress and everything on. So of course, like they do with all the city the hall bureaus before they like actually pan out and show, they zoom in really quickly to where you're just like, oh, that's a nice painting. And then they pull out and it's just so ridiculous because she's still on the thing smiling, like posing, but she's literally on an iceberg that is just being pushed off into Lake Michigan. So not even an iceberg, like a little chunk that they just big enough for her to be on. It's just, it's so ridiculous, but it's amazing. So then Leslie tells Chris that her and Ben's relationship started when they were sent on a road trip to Indianapolis back in May, but she says that she never received special treatment from Ben or did anything scandalous to cover up the scandal. So that was actually one of the episodes that we covered, like, you know, weeks back, the Indianapolis episode, when, yeah, Chris is the one who sent Ben and Leslie. Not saying that it's like they could use that as any leverage, like, well, yeah, we made out, but Chris, you're the one that sent us. Doesn't matter. He sent them as professionals, so. But he knows exactly what she's talking about, so I guess that's why she's probably using that date. Also, it's the first time, well, Chris thinks that they got together, but Leslie said that's technically when it started. So we then find out that Chris has 14 witnesses to interview, which is just absolutely insane. Like, even Leslie is stunned, and she asks, like what the hell's going on, basically? Like she's like, Chris, I already told you, like, I'm admitting to this. And Chris, though, he this is when he kind of yells back at her. He says that he thinks Leslie and Ben's scandal started before she said, and he thinks that she did receive special treatment and thinks that she may be guilty of bribery. So it's like, holy shit, like, wait a minute. When you hear like guilty of bribery, it's like, all right, that's a lot different. The other stuff, she's like, yeah, I can take care of this with the bribery thing. What the fuck? So then the committee decides to take a 10-minute break. During this recess, Leslie gathers the team and has all of them on damage control of sorts. This is kind of like earlier this season with Born and Raised, where Leslie knows that there's like damning evidence. It's like when she wrote the book and Tom has told her that Joan's not going to put her in the book club because she found out that there's a lie in there. So that's kind of like how this is, where Leslie's like, shit, like, what the hell's happening? So she's like telling everyone to get out there, and it's like, see if you can find anything out, like, or if he's got like a good witness or whatever. So during Ron's digging, he comes back and he finds out that Chris has a killer witness. So that's really all we know. So it is kind of like, okay, like, what the hell does that mean? So the meeting starts back up, and it's Ann Perkins. She's the first one on the stand. Ann has some good evidence for Leslie when she finds an email from Leslie about her and Ben that was sent on May 12th, the day after they returned from Indianapolis, which is when Leslie said the relationship started. So yeah, the video that she sent Anne, it's actually like a really long video, like maybe even too long, but I guess it's like time killer, but it's just like Leslie, she sends this video to Anne and it's all like photoshops and stuff like that, just about how like, and then a woman met the most beautiful man and na 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 na, and then she became president. So I love the foreshadowing there, because like Leslie, as we didn't know either, there's a good chance she becomes president. It's either her or Ben at the end of season 7. But it's just funny because at the end of it, she's just like, ah, Anne, call me tomorrow morning. I finally hooked up with Ben. Also, I learned how to use iMovie. I just love the throw-in at the end there. But next up, we got Tom on the stand. And of course, Chris has to bring up the part in Soulmates from season 3 where he saw Leslie kissing Tom to shut him up. However, even Tom acts normal, surprisingly, and explains to everyone that it was all just a misunderstanding and that they were never in a relationship. And Tom has to, he's like, and I love Leslie's response here too. It's great. He's just like, oh my God. He's like, no, that wasn't real. He's like, me kissing Leslie would be like me kissing like my great aunt or whatever, you know, just like calling Leslie out for being older than him. And she's just like, no, it wouldn't. Just the way she says it, like, kind of like, fuck you, Tom. Like, it wouldn't be like, I'm not that much older than you. And also in that episode, Tom, even when he tells Ben, he's just like, she knows what she's doing. So like Tom actually like dug the kiss. So shut up, Tom. Okay, where are we at here? Next up, April's on the stand, who just screams nonsense and blames Ethel Beavers, who I didn't mention before, but she is the court stenographer. She's off to the side, you know, typing everything out for the scandal. It's just great because she's just standing there. She's like, I don't understand why Leslie Knope's on the stand. It was Ethel Beavers who did it. And she's like pointing at her and like Ethel's not even responding. She's just like, just like typing it out. It's so funny. And they're like, the ethics committee is telling April like to stop yelling, like you're going to be in contempt of court. And she's like, I can't be in contempt of court. Ethel Beavers isn't getting, it's just like, hilarious. I don't know. It's so dumb. But like, yeah, April and Andy, they don't have a ton to do in this episode. They had a lot last week, like with the Roadhouse. Or Andy did at least, but this one they're just kind of there. Really, most of the crew doesn't have much to do except for Chris, Ben, and Leslie. So, and then I guess like Ron at the end, which I'll get to. But then we see Andy, who has no idea what the hell's going on, and he thinks he's in trouble for like a missing laptop, which is funny because he mentions it, and Chris is just like, "Wait, what laptop?" He's like, "So." It's just like, this is better though, because all these people you see going through, it's like that just, it's one more person knocked off of Chris's list. So it's better for Leslie. She is doing well, having refuted every witness so far and all of Chris's claims. But then Chris presents a receipt from the Pawnee Super Suites Motel saying she used government money for a romantic getaway. But Leslie knocks that one out of the park too, after Donna described the situation as strictly professional. Also, City Hall was being fumigated, so the motel was used as workspace. So this is where it seems kind of petty. Like, Chris just, all he has is a receipt. So he assumes that they got a motel just to, like, go fuck. And it's just like, come on, Chris. Like, Ben's your best friend. Like, you know he's not, like, I don't know. I think, like I talked about earlier, it's a tough situation because Chris is, he's doing his job, but he's kind of unlikable in this episode, you know, because obviously he's going against Ben and Leslie, but also he does, it seems like he goes kind of hard, like trying to find like damning evidence against them that he doesn't really need to go that hard on. However, I'm not going to spoil how the end happens because we're almost there. Next up is Ron, who keeps shouting to cover up any reveal of his home address, but then he's distracted and starts sniffing the air. So he's like, yeah, Leslie's like, okay, so your name's Ron Swanson, you live, and he's like, I don't know if they do that during every testimony where it's like, why do you have to state the person's home address and like their personal details? But it is also funny because Ron has everything redacted, and we know that. He, like, even his birthday, Leslie's the only person who knows when it is. Well, that and Baskin-Robbins, because he gets the free scoop of ice cream. But anyway, yeah, he just stops and he starts sniffing the air, you know, like when they do the zoom in on him and it's the, you know, like sniffing. But we know what that means. Tammy, too, is near. In fact, she's right outside and is up next. Ron runs in fear when he hears this. So after Tammy comes off like she's going to destroy Leslie, she immediately cowers when Chris says that if she's lying, he will fire her and have her prosecuted if she lies. So yeah, she comes in like a badass and she's just like Leslie's kind of like, I have no idea what to expect here, but like, you know, Tammy too doesn't like me very much, so she could bury me. And it's a great delivery because she starts, I have photos that will prove, and then that's when Chris jumps in and he's just like, I just have to remind you that you are under oath, and if you lie, you know, like, I could fire you, and you could be prosecuted, and she's just like, nothing, they'll prove absolutely nothing, and then she just starts packing her stuff up and leaves. It's so awesome, because, like, Ethel Beavers gives her a, like, she's happy to see her, it seems, but I love that. Yeah, she's, like, in the middle of talking, and Chris calls her out quickly, or tells her what could happen, and then she doesn't even, like, start the sentence over, she just continues it, and it's just like, nope, I got nothing, see you later. So Leslie actually thought that was Chris's killer witness, but then he mentions his last witness, the killer witness, George Williams from Public Works. Who? Like, who the fuck is George Williams? Well, he's the guy who saw Leslie and Ben kissing back in the season 3 finale, Lil Sebastian, the man that they bribed to stay quiet. Yep. So I did mention it in that episode. So if you are, like I said, for the first time, for some reason, God bless you and thank you if you're watching this for the first time with me as you're listening to this. I mentioned it in that episode that George Williams was going to be back. We saw him in that episode, and then we also saw him in the episode Jerry's Painting, where she made him, and this is after like he made the painting of her, so Leslie was feeling like very empowered, and she basically just went down to the maintenance guy and she's just like, hey, go fix that light in my office. So I wonder if this is another reason, because like he does say that he saw them kissing and that they got scared. Like he just, you know, he explains the situation and it's cool because they're kind of showing us a flashback of the scene. So if you're unfamiliar with it, it's kind of cool. They're keeping you caught up. But yeah, they gave him a $50 gift certificate to a spa that he says he used. So I feel like he should be fired too, right? Like he should, I mean, for accepting a bribe, because he essentially says, yes, I went home and I used it. I have a friend, it's no one who listens to the show or anything. It was a friend from like junior high years back, or high school, I guess. He got fired from his job at Target for accepting free food, like in the cafeteria or whatever. Now, I know that is completely different than like a government job, but doesn't that, I mean, like, yeah, he accepted a bribe. And then, like, told us about it, and it's like, I don't know, like, because when he comes in, obviously he's in street clothing because he's in court, but who knows if he still works for Public Works. I thought that was kind of interesting because, yeah, technically, I think there's some shadiness on his side, too. But then Leslie starts to panic, and she asks for a 55-day recess, but the ethics committee says since they're nearing the end, she can have 30 minutes. During the recess, she once again gets the team together. Now, though, they're getting desperate and just kind of checking through all of Pawnee's laws. So this is just like they're looking for something like anything that they can use. They're just like, yeah, like going through like old law books. Like everyone's just kind of scattered around the room. I do like that, like from a covering standpoint, like meaning like me covering this episode, this is an easy one because everyone's like together, so that's at least kind of nice. I don't have to keep like jumping back and forth between settings, whatnot. But anyway, nothing relevant really happens, except they find out there's a couple of the old like Pawnee like archaic laws that have never changed. And there's one, this is so fucked up. Donna's just like, oh my god, she's like, black people still can't use city sidewalks legally. So So Leslie's just like, you know what, we're not going to find anything here. And she just asks, can someone please go get Ben? Maybe he's got an idea. So Donna says that she's going to go out and find him. So she goes out and she says that he's not there. And he's supposed to be like, he was supposed to have been waiting on the other side of the wall. That's at least what he told Leslie he'd be doing. However, he's not there. So Donna says she'll go look for him. So then we see Leslie standing in front of a huge mural that is pretty much, it just like depicts all the other murals in City Hall, which I've talked about so many times. It's like a greatest hits almost, like, because it's split down the middle, and then it's not like there's a line down the middle. It's actually like a really cool painting that just shows you the good and the bad from Pawnee's very questionable past, because like the stuff from the bad is like, there's like the Pawnee Bread Factory fire. There's just so many of the atrocities. But then you look on the good side and it's like, they even show the picture of, I can't remember the names, but it was the Wamapoke Indian marrying the woman. And that was another one where they showed you the nice picture and then they panned back and you could see that there was like a war going on behind them with like the Indians and the settlers, you know. So it was really funny, but it's just fucked up because even the stuff on the good side is like still questionable. But when Leslie tells Ron that she belongs on the bad side, he gives her some advice, as like Ron seemingly always does, because like again, he, like in last week's episode when he's like, Andy's one of the only people in the office that I'm not actively rooting against. And I said last week, that's kind of bullshit because Ron's always there to help out and give a, you know, like a lending hand, a, you know, shoulder to cry and whatever. But yeah, he gives her some great advice here, telling her that being able to admit you're wrong and being able to learn and grow from it is what makes someone a good person. So just then Leslie decides that she's not going to fight the charges anymore. However, just then, Chris and the ethics committee return to the chambers, Leslie fully worried that she's about to get fired. However, in a shocking turn of events, Leslie is only suspended 2 weeks with pay. She asks Chris, and this is like, that's the end of the committee, everyone's wrapping up, and she walks over to Chris, and she's just like, I thought I was going to get fired. Why wasn't I fired? Like, she definitely should have been fired. And we find out that the reason Ben wasn't outside of the chambers is that during that last break, Ben met with the ethics committee and took full responsibility for the bribe and resigned, effective immediately. So Leslie just can't believe it. She even says to Chris, like, no, you can't let him do that. And Chris is just like, because again, like I said before, he's Chris's best friend. Chris definitely tried not to get him, and they show some of, like, his crying and stuff. It's a really funny scene, actually, when they cut away. So I have to say, I've been a little bit down on Chris lately. I've talked about it in some of the episodes. You know, this has nothing to do with his character, but I've been, like, making fun of his hair, for one. But I've just been kind of saying that he's been, like, a little, like, scummish, I think. Like, in how he was acting around Jerry with Jerry's daughter. And then, like, just, like, some of how it's, like, him kind of going back, like, with, oh, I think maybe I like Ann Perkins again. I'm not sure, but just, like, mostly the Jerry stuff. But I love this interaction that he has with Leslie here, where he tells her very sincerely that he was just doing his job and that he hopes she can understand that. And, like, I literally just talked about it, like, a couple minutes ago, how he's being kind of annoying. But here is where, like, this scene is where you can really feel for Chris, and you can understand, and again, all the medicine and everything, and all the herbal remedies that he had out to try to, like, keep himself, because he was having, like, he was, like, on the verge of a breakdown, because he was prosecuting Leslie, who he really, really respects, and then Ben, who's, like, his best friend. So it's a great interaction. And then he also tells her that she's an excellent government employee and that she's the only person he's ever met that's worthy of being Ben's girlfriend. He then tells her that Ben's transcript is on the record and that she should read the last page. So Ethel Beavers reads it to her, and I love the editing here as it cuts back and forth with Ethel reading and then the actual scene. When Chris asks if losing his job is worth it, Ben said, yes, I love Leslie Knope. So, like, there's more of it, but that's, like, the gist of the whole thing. So when you think about it, it's kind of funny. Leslie now, in four seasons of Parks and Rec, she has two boyfriends that are on the record talking about, like, something good about her, because remember back in season two, the episode Leslie's House, when she was dating Justin, she actually called, like, the ethics committee on herself. And remember, like, so everything was on record of Justin saying that he had, like, an awesome time at her dinner party. It was kind of dumb in the end when Leslie's like, yeah, anything's cool when you have it on the record. But anyway, so she's also got Ben now saying that he loves her on record. So then we see, you know, so we cut over. It's outside. It's snowing out. We see Leslie's car pull up to Ben's house, where he is already sitting out on the front porch. So obviously he knew she was coming. And I always love this scene. It just seems so genuine to me when Leslie gets out of the car and the two of them kind of walk and meet up to each other. And Leslie's like, hey, honey, how was your day? Because, I mean, like, she hasn't talked to him yet, maybe except just, like, to, hey, I'm going to come over and we'll talk. Because, like I said, it's snowing. It's wintertime. Why would Ben be sitting outside unless he knew she was coming? But it's so cute, because it's like, she knows how his day was. It sucked. He had to resign from his job. And, you know, she got suspended for 2 weeks, granted, which wasn't the worst situation that could have happened, but this all happened because they were careless and because, well, not necessarily careless. I mean, like, they love each other, but maybe there was a different way they could have gone about doing this. But Ben is obviously bummed out, but it doesn't matter. He just hopes that Leslie's campaign is not affected. Then we see that Ethel Beavers, the whole time she's been in the backseat of Leslie's car, Leslie calls her out, and she is literally just there to read Leslie's testimony to Ben, which states that Leslie loves him too. And then when Ben and Leslie start making out, it's like quiet for a couple seconds, and Ethel's just standing there like, can I get a ride home? It's cold as hell out here, or whatever, it's damn cold. I love cold as hell, that's one of my favorite oxymorons. All right, and then the last thing we have is the tag of the episode.
Can you please state your name for the committee?
Gary Gergich.
Oh, God, Jerry, you can't even get your own name right.
Actually, my real name is Gary.
Gary?
On my first day here, the old director, he called me Jerry, and I just didn't think I should correct him.
That's ridiculous. Your name is Jerry.
No, legally, my name is Gary.
Gary Gergich? Jerry Gergich. Gary Gergich. Jerry Gergich. Gary Gergich. Jerry. God, they're both horrible. But Jerry's better. I'm going to call you Jerry. Okay, Jerry. Do you remember a time? I'm sorry, I can't get over the Gary Jerry thing.
Neither can I. Jerry, you can go. We need a 5-minute break.
I love this so much. And like, if you remember last week, I did talk about this when he showed Tom his original Parks ID badge and it did say Gary on there. So I think, I don't know, maybe that was last week, them just being like, hey, no. So when they did the big reveal right there with Gary telling us his real name, when maybe they were just like, oh, wouldn't that be funny if we could actually prove it? Like if someone went back to be like, I wonder if it ever says Gary, and it's like literally the episode right before. But I think it is so brilliant too, and maybe this isn't even like the way that it was intended to be, but the fact that they put this as the tag, the part at the end of the episode that so many people at this point, they've watched it, now they've got up, like if they're watching it in real time, they've gotten up to go like pee or to go grab like some food or whatever because The Office is on next or whatever. But it's just so hilarious to me that because it's Jerry, it's a significant part. But nope, we're going to put it in the tag. So it just, it's brilliant, and it just works so much for the character. All right, on IMDb, this episode is sitting at an 8.4, some of my thoughts. So generally, overall, I mean, like, just listening to the episode, I didn't really have a lot of complaints. I mean, I did say, like, April and Andy weren't in it much, and that kind of sucks. But everyone's at least, like, kind of visible for most of it because, like, you see a lot of the scenes where when Leslie's not on trial, a lot of the people from the Parks Department are up. I say when Leslie's not on trial, she's on trial this whole entire time. But you see the people that are giving their testimony. So you see everyone. And then pretty much whenever there's a recess, Leslie's got the entire group and they're with her. So it's pretty awesome. What do we got here? The classic cold open with Ron trashing his computer. One of the guys I work with, actually, he's like kind of a Parks and Rec fan, but I think he's more just a Ron Swanson fan. He actually sent that to me recently, and I gave him a couple Parks and Rec stickers that I have, and he was just like, oh my god, I didn't know you like Parks and Rec. And I was like, yeah, I have a podcast, but he's not that big a fan that I expect him to listen to the podcast. So anyway, but it is an awesome cold open. Yeah, Chris, like I talked about, a little annoying to kind of, like for maybe like the, I don't know, 80% of the episode. And then at the end there, when he gives, when he tells Leslie pretty much how much he respects her and how hard it was for him to have to do this. And it was just a really good scene. Like I said, especially for how I haven't been a big fan of Chris in the last few episodes. I love seeing Tammy too. I have to point her out. This one was fun because, yeah, seeing Tammy too, and then also that guy George Miller, George Williams, the guy who works for Public Works. It was just a cool payoff. Like, I was not expecting that. I don't think anyone was. It's just like, oh, because when he took the bribe, I mean, like, the way he responded was kind of like, yep, I understand, my lips are sealed. So again, scummy on that guy's point, part two. And then of course the tag, the Jerry Gary, just the reveal there, it's so funny to me. And at the time, you like, people probably just didn't think it was that big deal. It was just one more thing that was like, all right, that sucks for Jerry, but I mean, like, it's not like we're gonna call him Gary. And they still don't, like, he still goes by Jerry for the most part, but later on or next he will turn into Larry, and I believe that's in season 5. And then in season 6 he turns into Terry, and then in season 7 he gets called Mailman Barry. So I've said before, like, it is funny, it's clever, it starts to run its course when, like, yeah, when you get to Terry, but, like, Jerry, Gary, Larry, I think was pretty funny, but then, like, when there's a few more of them, it's like, all right, it's kind of running its course. Speaking of wrapping things up, that's going to wrap up this episode. If you'd like to contact the show, citizendepawnee@gmail.com is how you can do that. Please like and follow on Instagram at citizendepawneepodcast and at parksrecmemes. Next week, I'll be covering season 4, episode 10. Citizen Nope. Thank you for listening to Citizen to Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. My name is Brian, and I'll see you next Tuesday. When Leslie runs for city council, her four opponents are Bobby Newport, Fester Tribb, Manrico De La Rosa, and Brandy Max, with four X's.